Now it's time for Power of Prophecy, continuing the legacy of Tex Mars, exposing evil, and promoting Jesus Christ as Savior. Here's your host, Jerry Barrett.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. I'm your host, Jerry Barrett. Honored to have you join me again this week. I have asked my partner, Sandra Myers, to come back in the studio and enlighten us with another one of her outstanding topics. Sandra, welcome to Power of Prophecy.
Thank you, Jerry. It's good to be here.
Now, each time I get to have you on the radio show, and every month when I get to read your article in the newsletter, I'm kind of sitting there with bated breath waiting to see what you've come up with, because everything that you've written and everything that we've talked about on these airwaves has been extremely intriguing and makes me go,
Where has her mind gone this time? How did she come up with that?
This program is going to knock your socks off. It is titled Your Digital Life. And some of you know, but some of you may not, but you have no idea the depths of the surveillance upon your person that they are conducting between the algorithms that they have written and the assorted methods of gathering data on you. You're not even remotely aware of how much of your daily life that they have tracked. And I'm just as guilty. I mean, we have no clue, do we, Sandra?
No, that's for sure. And even worse, with the information that they track, their algorithms are so advanced. This is like the AI type of thing. Their algorithms are so advanced that they can also serve to psychologically influence you, program you, and even cause psychological turmoil and distress because of what they know, what they can extrapolate. They know you better than you know yourself. It's kind of scary in the sense that it's almost like there's two of us, that we're shadows of ourselves. We as a person are almost a shadow of what they actually know about us. If we sat and thought inwardly about some things, we might have some discoveries. I guess I don't like this after all. But they, through all your selections and all the data gathering that they do, they can figure this out because it's all math. It's very, very impressive. You and I were talking before the show about this one article, Jerry, What Your Digital Footprint Says About You. Such an excellent article by a woman named Sandra Matt, M-A-T-V, who's a social scientist at Columbia Business School and the author of a book called Mind Masters, The Data-Driven Science of Predicting and Changing Human Behavior. That's some of what their goal is. It discusses the complex relationships between our digital lives, our data, and our self-determination. I want to read some of this article, but I wanted to mention this quote some too that you and I talked briefly about, Jerry, right before the show. It's by Aldous Huxley, and we know he wrote that Brave New World. People will come to love their oppression, to adore the technologies that undo their capacities to think. I'm going to read that one more time. People will come to love their oppression, to adore the technologies that undo their capacities to think. That's pretty much where we are right now. And the worst of it is we've kind of put ourselves in cages of our own making. It's kind of like being two different people, and you know, with technology, there's so much good to it, but that's the insidious part. They have this beautiful facade to it, but there's so much behind it that we really have no clue on. Back to this article. It says digital footprints are the traces we leave as we interact with technology. We generate millions of them every day. These include traces that we intentionally put out there, things that we post on social media, people we follow on LinkedIn, that creates our spider web of the people that we know besides the social media, our Spotify playlist, which is your music, and our Pinterest pages, whether it's cooking or hobbies or whatever else they do on Pinterest. Such interactions announce who we are, and social scientists call these identity claims. Now, with that, to go on further, there are other digital footprints too. They're the traces we leave without really thinking about it. These are called behavioral residue. Essentially the residue that you leave behind as you're going about your business. They're created as we interact with technology. When we swipe our credit card, when we do a Google search or any other search engine, when we shop online, when we accept cookies, like when we're visiting certain websites, which almost every website uses cookies now, when we use our smartphone apps that generate GPS data. A couple months ago, in October, I did an article on surveillance pricing, how you may have an app on your phone, let's say for Target, and you pull into the Target parking lot. Well, because they have you in the parking lot, when you get inside to buy, let's say it's a TV, it may be $100 more than what they would have sold it to you for if you were shopping at home online, because they know you can go around and look around. So back to this article. You say all these data traces make us vulnerable, this is a question, to psychological targeting. What does that mean? Psychological targeting. If that's not scary, I don't know what is. And she answers, on a basic level, the way I think about psychological targeting is that it describes the ability of algorithms to decode our mind. This is the part I was talking about before, that these algorithms are so advanced. These people know us way better than we do, than our moms and dads do, than our sweethearts do. It makes inferences about how we feel, think, and behave. We can use AI-powered predictive models to take individual pieces of raw data about us and put them all together to create a picture of a person. Our desires, our needs, our preferences, motivations, dreams, hopes, and fears. But the second stage, and I'm continuing to read now, the second stage of psychological targeting, which to me is the most interesting part, is that once I understand who you are, I can use the data to potentially change the course of your life. I can try to influence you and decide what information I want to give you. Okay, I'm going to step away from the article. This means that they can influence you for better or for worse. They can influence your political thoughts, your conservative thoughts, because they are so advanced in their thinking, they may be able to feed you some information about, let's say, gun rights that make you think, oh, hey, maybe I don't have all the answers to this, and cause you to doubt yourself. Mm. It's so scary, the depth. It's like walking into a forest, and you walk into this big giant spider web, and it's super wide, it's super deep, and nobody likes to walk into a spider web. You know, when you do, you kind of turn into the Kung Fu master trying to get it all off your head. But this is so big that you'll never be able to do that. Back to the article, if someone's personal data gets into the wrong hands, it can open a door to a whole new level of discrimination. In some countries, information about your spending habits, your mental health, your sexual orientation, or your political affiliation can determine whether you're able to get a loan or a particular job. Psychological targeting can be used against you in other ways. It can be used in an attempt to influence critical choices, like I was saying just a moment ago, as to who you vote for. It can be used to fuel hatred. So you have somebody who's kind of sitting on the fence about what they see or a particular thing. Let's say it's DEI or BLM or something like that. I don't know, Gary, you and I, we believe that God made each and every one of us the ground at the foot of the cross is level, and everybody, every single person on this old earth needs Jesus.
Amen.
Without regard to color or anything. Now, we absolutely dislike seeing injustice. We think everybody, or at least myself, I shouldn't speak for you, I feel like everybody deserves a fair chance. But with this, if you're sitting on an edge, if a person is sitting on an edge, they can feed you some stuff. Let's take Thomas Crooks, for instance, okay? The would-be assassin of Donald Trump in Pennsylvania. Thomas Crooks, from what I read, correct me if I'm wrong, Gary, Thomas Crooks at one time liked President Trump. He was won over through, I can't follow the exact pattern, but this is what happened. He changed his mind. And it's potentially from feeding him stuff in his circle, in his social media, in all of the stuff that he does. They're feeding him information. They've got him, he was going to a little college there for a little while, so they've got him there too, where they can also feed him information. Then he starts with the gender confusion and stuff like that. And they just feed this stuff. They keep feeding it to them, and it's force-fed and psychological conditioning and targeting. So it's an algorithm that knows exactly what you believe in, what your past preferences have been, what your past behaviors have been, and they can take and either reinforce it or create chaos.
With the depth of this algorithm, this data collection, they could manipulate a person back and forth from one side of the fence to the other, and they would be oblivious as to why, much like Crooks, he at one time supported Trump, and then the next thing you know, he's got gender confusion, he's not sure what he is, and then he hates Trump, and it just...
Yep, Trump derangement. Seems like a new kind of MKUltra sort of thing.
But we've signed on for this.
It could be used for a force of good, but they don't do that. It could be used to help you reach lofty goals, to excel in college, to get a job and work your way to the top, to save money, to be healthier, to eat healthier food, to exercise, to work at volunteer charities, or, it could be used for a force of good, but I'm not sure that that's what we're seeing cumulatively in this.
No, I agree. I don't, anytime you allow, it seems like Satan's minions grab a hold of this faster than everyday people.
Yep, that is one of the biggest thing, is that smart technologies do not necessarily equal smart ethics.
Most assuredly.
It more seems to lead to dumb ethics. So the different ways that we get tracked, as it mentioned in this one thing, this article was, shopping online, Google, smartphone apps, your search results. Friends, please continue to pray for Gary and I, because as we research things, you can just imagine the footprint that we leave behind. What they know, what they can extrapolate about us. Pray for protection against fake information, against dark forces. just keep us in your prayers if you would.
Yes, please. They would. I'm sure they're having a field day with my search. I'm all over the place.
I am too. You know, I was thinking about this as I was preparing for the show over the last couple of weeks when we first were talking about doing this show, and I mentioned it to you. I thought, you know, if we look at a 24-hour day, that one article already talked about hundreds, maybe even thousands of places where you're tracked as you proceed through your day. You know, rise and shine, sunshine, your smartphone that you put at your bedside and told you to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning. So it knows when you're waking up. Okay. You've got to get up potentially depending upon the day of the week. You may have to go to work. Even small details like, was it a soft awakening sort of thing where it gets, you know, starts out gentle and you wake up real easy and start whistling, you know, whistle while you work? Or is it heavy metal, loud music that has to jolt you? That tells them something about your personality too. Amazon Alexa even knows your personal schedule. Everybody thought, not everybody, a lot of people, especially our younger people, think that it would be great to have a smart home. But, you know, is your smart home spying on you?
Yes.
Yes, it is. Your refrigerator, some of your coffee makers, they'll know how many pods you have left and tell you if you need to. If it goes through your Wi-Fi, and you think that your Wi-Fi is just only a signal spreader, it's not. I can be sitting at work. I have never plugged my phone into my computer here at work. But yet, if I'm looking for something personal, I will look it up on my phone, typically. Because that way, you know, if I'm thinking of something right then, and let's say I'm looking for something for my husband, I may look it up on my phone, and I do it on my phone so that when I take it home, I have that information with me, as opposed to I don't always take the computer home. But it will still come up. I will have related things come up on my work computer that's never touched my phone. Why? Because it went through the Wi-Fi. And that internet service provider. The internet service provider, all those clicks and everything that you do, that belongs to the internet service provider to do with what they want. And what they do, of course, is sell those results. What ads, what videos, what images, what links you click in. So all that information is for sale. If you think that your emails are private, no, they're probably not. Proton Mail might be a fairly private one, but as with so many things, they get going and they end up getting bought out because the money is more attractive than staying in business and working for a living. The cookies in your computer also help feed, you know, the information that comes through your computer. Okay, so you've gotten up, your smart water meter on your house tells the computers that you must have taken a shower that morning because it's having to pump water into the house. Your smart air conditioning, those are controlled a lot of times by Wi-Fi and your telephone. They know whether you're turning the air conditioner up. Oh, you must be gone from the house now, so we're turning the air conditioner up. The air conditioning in some places, in some cities, like in Austin, you can sign up and the city controls your air conditioning. So let's say you're home from work sick. Well, it's got the air conditioner up at 80 degrees and you're sweating to death and you need it cooler, but the city of Austin has got it under control. So now you get in the car. Let's talk about your car. Your car has a GPS now. Almost all newish cars have GPSs. They know where you are. They have little black boxes. Let's say our friend Marcus, he was in a car accident, and he thought, you know, he says, I know that light was green when I got there. And suddenly I got hit. I got T-boned. I remember it perfectly, like it was yesterday. But when the other driver's attorney gets there for the deposition on this, she pulls out a report from Marcus's vehicle, because now it's basically kind of like you get a search warrant and you find out what's going on. So Marcus's vehicle, we'll say this guy's name is Marcus, his event data recorder, that's what's in your car, told a more complicated truth. 5 seconds before the impact, Marcus was traveling 52 miles an hour in a 35 mile an hour zone. He hit the brakes hard just 1.2 seconds before the collision. The data also showed something else Marcus had forgotten. He forgot to put his seatbelt on. The attorney placed the printout on the table, says, Mr. Henderson, your own car says you were speeding, not wearing a seatbelt. The other driver did enter on a yellow light, but you were going 17 miles over the speed limit and couldn't stop in time. Now, you can guess how that went. That's like cameras in cars. Those can be really good, especially in this day and age of road rage and people trying to get in front of you and slam the brakes on, or just if you end up entering an area where they're protesting or something. It has its good side, but it also has its bad side. And many of you who are driving know that some of the insurance companies offer you these little readers that can read your little black box, determine what your rate is going to be, how much you're going to pay for insurance by how hard you brake, whether you're going very fast, whether you take off like a jackrabbit from a stoplight, whether you're leaning hard because your car has, pardon me if I say this wrong, like a gyrometer or gyrometer, an accelerometer. It has all this information, all that just in one little area in your car to get to work in the morning. Got a car payment? That says a lot about you too. How much is your car payment as compared to how much you're making? Are you spending too much? Are you frivolous? As far as, you know, some people have $1,500 a month car payments. That's just information that gets fed into this. Do you hit the Starbucks on the way to work? Well, what that tells you also is that you spend frivolously and you believe marketing hype for that horrible coffee. And I'm sorry if you like Starbucks, but it's really pretty bad stuff. Let's say you go to McDonald's and you order breakfast and you put it on, you swipe your little card, and well, if you're buying breakfast, those McGriddles and stuff like that, could be a heart attack waiting to happen. Maybe the pharmacy companies now, the pharma drug companies, will be starting to send you stuff for statins and advertising for statins. And that's even before you get to work. All this that it already told your digital dossier in the sky, you might say. I could go on and on. Arriving at work, do you get there early? Do you get there on time? Do you get there late? Those all tell something about your person. And this is all stored away in your algorithm. Same thing with lunchtime. Do you set an alarm? Do you listen to music? Do you doom scroll through lunch and completely waste time? Do you go out to Burger King and buy a double Whopper? Again, you might see statin ads for yourself.
What do you do when you get to work? Do you go to the restroom and hide in a stall? And you doom scroll Facebook for 45 minutes? I mean, they're tracking all of this.
Yes, the GPS is that accurate where it's going to know whether you're at your desk, whether you're in the bathroom, how long you've been there, because your social media, your phone is going to track that, how long you're on social media that day and when, at what times of day. And, you know, while we're on this subject, in the bathroom, I'm going to do a public service announcement for my husband. My husband has mobility issues. And he goes into these restrooms, and these young, what appear to be healthy men go into the stall, the handicapped stall. and they will sit there and doom scroll and check whatever, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, whatever it is, for quite some time. And he needs the handles to get up. So if you're healthy enough, don't go into the handicap and tell your kids and grandkids not to do that, because there's probably elderly people who may need that. Okay, public service announcement done.
Yeah, how many people think of that, though, Sandra? Because if you're not challenged on your mobility, personally, I like it because I got lots of elbow room. I'm claustrophobic. I don't like being in one of those narrow stalls in a public restroom. So, but I had never given it any thought until you said that. Now I might as well have parked in the handicap stall when I pulled into the grocery store.
Right.
I've done the same thing. How many people really consider, and this may be a little off topic, but it's not, because we don't consider what our actions are doing to other people. We are so focused on me. And they said the 80s was the me generation. The 80s got nothing on these kids today.
That's for sure.
It's all about me. It's me, 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 me. And that's why TikTok is so big. That's why Snapchat is so big. That's why all these goofy dating apps are so big. Pinterest. I have never been on Pinterest. I don't get it, but there may be some good things on there, but how much of that is braggadocio? Because this is what I created and you need to worship at the altar of me, and you can copy it, but you need to give credit to me because I'm the one that did this. It's not about,
right.
You know, nobody, we have just gotten to lunch at the office and we've talked about they're monitoring your water usage, your electricity, your car's mileage, your value of your car, how you drive, what you got to eat or drink on the way to the office, how long you hid in the bathroom at the office, what you eat for lunch, and that's just half the day. That hasn't even covered the afternoon, your drive home, what are you going to have for, we're going to get to that on the other side, but think about all the data points that Sandra has pointed out. And we have just gotten to the lunchtime break. Your digital footprint, you might as well be Sasquatch because it's out there. And everybody, well, no, I don't back the cloud. The cloud, everything is stored in the cloud.
I don't understand that.
I don't get it either, Sandra. That's why our database at the ministry is a standalone server. There's no outside connection. Nobody can access it because we care about the integrity of our friends who have thoughtfully supported this ministry for well over 30 years. Golly, Sandra, that makes us old.
I know. That makes us old, Jerry.
Big time old. But that's the value we put on our friends and their ability to go about their daily life without worrying about the credit card number being stolen from the cloud. It doesn't happen through Power of Prophecy, I can tell you that. We have flown through 30 minutes. My guest today is Sandra Myers. We are discussing your digital life today. Stay with us. We have to take a break, and when we come back, Sandra and I are going to dive right back in. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Stay with us, won't you? We'll be right back. Hello, friends. Jerry Barrett back with you again. Thought Police, Big Brother, Orwellian. These words have become part of our national vocabulary because of George Orwell's classic novel 1984, the story of one man's nightmare odyssey through a world ruled by warring states and a power structure that controls not only information, but individual thought and memory. A minor functionary named Winston Smith joins a covert brotherhood and pursues a forbidden love affair against the cold, gray backdrop of the Republic of Oceania, only to become a hunted enemy of the state and Big Brother. Today, over a half a century after it was written, Orwell's prophetic haunting tale of conformity and identity strikes a disturbing chord. As we follow Winston Smith through his rebellion, imprisonment, torture, and re-education, we witness firsthand the worst crime we can inflict upon ourselves and others, the destruction of the truths and freedoms that make us who we are. George Orwell's 1984, 294-page book. We're only asking $14. Please add $6 shipping and handling. That will make your total $20 for 1984. You can order your copy by phoning us toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-800-234-9673. If you care to phone our regular line, that number is 512-263-9780. We're in the office Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. You can use those charge cards at our secure shopping cart at powerofprophecy.com. There's an ad for the book right there on the main page. Click on it, put in your name, charge card, address, shipping method, hit submit, we'll get it and get it coming to you. If you care to send in a check, money order, or cash, please make your check or money order payable to Power of Prophecy, and you can mail it to us here at 4819 R.O. Drive, Suite 102, Spicewood, Texas, and our zip code is 78669. Okay, and now let's return to our regular program. My guest today is Sandra Myers. Sandra, welcome back.
Thank you, Jerry.
Now, we were talking during the halftime break. I had not given it this much thought. I know they've tracked my search history. I know they've tracked my GPS from wherever I go. During football season, I'm sure they're wondering what the heck is going on because I put on about 1,500 miles to go do high school football. But what got you clued into all of this tracking and data collection to make you want to do this program?
Well, it actually started a number of years ago, and it kind of made me mad. I went into this grocery store that has since gotten swallowed up into a big conglomerate. I don't know if it's Kroger's or King Supers or one of those, but it's a local store here. And they had this customer card where if you sign up for this card, it made you eligible for special discounts. Well, I recognized exactly what it was as soon as it came out. It was a way to track what I was purchasing so that they could target me, and not just target me with different, with additional advertising, but sell my information to other people who could target me. Let's say I'm buying way back in the day feminine product. And so now I'm a target for advertising for those kinds of things. And I knew what it was when I saw it, and you know, I asked them a couple of times, you know, why is it they feel the need to have my information so that I can shop there with confidence and get a good deal? Why don't I just go down the road to the HEB grocery store, which is probably my favorite grocery store, and shop there, and they don't make me do that. Of course, if I use a card there, they can probably connect my card with all my groceries, and they do spit out coupons at the end sometimes that are related to stuff that I've put in my basket. So they still have a dossier on me also. But that was what first drove me. There's an excellent book that came out probably 15 or 20 years ago by Catherine Albrecht, and it's called Spy Chip, and it's about exposing an expose on our habits and secrets and money-hungry marketers and savvy criminals and government snoops, and how they, through how you buy, as well as the chips that they put in things. There's little, sometimes you see them on there that you can remove them. They're little, they're not barcodes, Jerry. What are those things called? They're almost like,
RFID.
Almost like this little, yes, thank you. RFID chips. They can track those also. So, is this not a spider web? Is this not just a murky, scary, deep spider web of how much information they gather and save and have a dossier on you and then figure out with the algorithms what other things you like, don't like, and how to feed that to you depending upon what the response is. And I'll tell you the other part of this, and this ties with the Spy Chips book and what I said about getting that card. So if you have a Costco card, they know what you buy. They know that you bought 10 bottles of wine last week or 4 boxes of Pop-Tarts or Ho-Hos or whatever. They know your choices. They know your health. Maybe you'll start getting memberships for gyms or something like that. Or there's such a concentration of information. Here's the bottom line to it. You, my friend, are a commodity. You are nothing more than a commodity. And it's about selling you stuff. It's about using you. Ages ago, when I used to be friends with a group of libertarians, they told me that basically the same thing, that you were just a commodity and you weren't even your own person. They encouraged me to just kind of pull back from some of the digital stuff. But you're nothing to them except a means to an end. And it's a program for another day that I really want to do, or an article, is about the commoditization of humanity, because it's the same thing with businesses too. You walk into the door of a restaurant, especially like these big conglomerate restaurants, let's say Cracker Barrel. They're going to tell you what you like and what you will have, and it's really about making money for the shareholders as opposed to actually having a marketable concept and something that they're selling to you and having respect for you as a customer. But we'll save that for another day.
You know, all of this boils down to money.
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 Absolutely. Absolutely. You're just basically an algorithm and a means of, I was going to go on another thought, and I'll throw this out there for your thought process. But if you're so much of a non-person to them, you remember in China they had a one-child policy. In the United States, in a lot of countries right now they are rethinking their one-child policies and their discouragement of having families, because they need people to feed this machine. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're encouraging big families again because they need people to feed the machine. This is also why they bring people from third world countries into here too, is because those people, wherever they're from, they will help feed the machine. And so if they're over in Africa, Ethiopia, Somalia, wherever, they are less likely to feed the world economic system. If they're brought over here up to Minnesota, the 80,000 Somalis that they brought into Minnesota, these people will help feed the world economic system because they are producers. They are whatever it is they're doing, whether they're plumbers or engineers or whatever it is they're doing. They help feed the monetary system. And that's all we are, is just a commodity to them. So I've kind of gone off track, but it's still quite related. Back to our schedule though, Jerry, we're talking about our 24-hour day. We had made it through lunchtime. What about after work? Do you go right home to your wife and children? Do you stop and check out the happy hour? Do you do that regularly? How much money do you spend on alcohol? Are you an alcoholic or a partier, even if you're not married? Kind of makes you manipulatable in certain ways. Do you eat dinner out regularly? You're a frivolous spender, one who's easily manipulated into buying things that they probably don't need. Do you go to the gym? Great. We can sell you stuff like Muscle Milk or protein bars or things like that for advertising. We can sell you maybe upgraded smartwatches or exercise equipment or gym clothes or what have you. But it's not just about selling you, but it's also about using your information. This all is your online persona and dossier. If you're wearing a smartwatch, we haven't talked about smartwatches yet. Okay, let's say you go to the gym after work and you're wearing your smartwatch. They can tell you whether it's aerobics day, whether you're getting on the treadmill or the bicycle or the elliptical. Your watch knows this because of your breathing, your pulse rate, how steady it is. Does it go up and then stay stable for a while mostly and then go back down? I mean, you might do some high intensity parts in there, but it's still, there's going to be a certain amount of stability there. That's going to look different on your smartwatch than, let's say, it's chest and arms day at the gym. Well, there's small bits and pieces of exertion. All this is done. And how serious you are you just going to the gym to show up and kind of phone it in to make it look like you went to the gym because you know you need to go, but you don't really have your heart in it. It all shows up on your watch. Jerry, you said something to me the other day about when you were at the gym.
Yeah, I'd get on the elliptical machine, and the watch would go, oh, it looks like you're doing an elliptical machine. And it would track. It would tell me how many miles I put on the elliptical machine, what my heart rate was. Then it said, are you done with your workout? I mean, this is crazy to think that we buy these things. We don't consider the data points that we're putting out there.
How much information, how much heart you're putting into it. Are you improving? Or are you declining? Are you likely to continue? Are you likely to quit? Should they be putting advertisements in for the next whatever thing that's going to make you healthier? Or should they put Burger King ads in?
Yeah. And, or does your scale, do you have an app on your phone for the scale in your bathroom that you're weighing yourself on?
Yeah, that I don't have.
So They track that data point. Well, he's trying to lose weight. Well, he's not. So we need to sell him blood pressure pills. We need to sell him Ozempic for weight loss. We need to sell him statins to keep his cholesterol level down. Because at breakfast, he ate garbage. At lunch, he ate garbage. And at dinner, he drank dinner. So this guy's got health issues. So, well, let's send this to Humana, and they can start sending him flyers for health insurance. And eventually, they're going to start sending this information to the mortuary, and they're going to start trying to sell you a plot. I mean, you can extrapolate this as far as you want to, but your data is dollars and cents to these purveyors of information. They've got your dossier, and they're going to give it to you. So let's just say, okay, you've worked out, you've behaved yourself tonight. You didn't turn on the booze. Now you go home and you got on smart TV.
Yep. And it watches, it knows everything and extrapolates that information. Back when we were kids, Jerry, we had what? Three or four channels.
Yeah, we had
four. And guess who was the remote control?
I can tell you, I was my dad's remote. He would smack me on the head and say, Jerry, put it on 24. And then I would put it on channel 24, put it on 36, put it on 36, put it on 7, go outside and turn the antenna because the antenna had a pair of vice grips on it so we could turn the pole, get the antenna to get a good signal, tighten the vice grips down, and it would stay against the trailer house. And sometimes it took a little extra. I mean, Dad would make me or my little brother sit over by the TV and maybe touch something or just get close enough and the signal would straighten up and we'd have to sit there while he watched Walter Cronkite or something. That was TV back then. It was analog. Not anymore.
Yep. But now everything, you've either got cable, very few people get their TV from over the air. Most people either have cable, satellite, or those who have cut the cord, as they call it, are actually adopting a new cord, and that's their internet. So they might have Amazon Prime shows or Hulu and or Netflix and whoever, Disney Plus, Paramount, and have all of these, yet possibly not even watch it. Because once you start watching them, then you get bored with one, and then you sign up for another one. And then you get bored and you sign up with another one. What you watch is going to tell people or our dossier collectors, information collectors, about who you are. Do you watch Yellowstone or whatever the newer one is, Landman? Okay, well, if you do this, if you watch those, then you're probably a patriot. You're probably conservative. You're probably GOP. You probably are 2A, gun rights. You may even be pro-life. Suddenly, them knowing that about you gives them a whole big bag of information. If you watch Real Housewives of New Jersey, okay, this person likes drama, possibly a woman, probably a Democrat, probably out to crook the system any way they can because they want whatever they can get for as little as they can put into it. They probably way overspend on everything because they're trying to get this great presentation. So they have 2-inch nails, Botox, and fillers that has to be redone every 2 weeks to take care of the roots. Fancy Coach purses or Hermes and fancy clothes. They way overspend beyond their budget, but they're the first to complain and say, my parents could raise us on one salary. I can't hardly afford this $2,500 apartment and all my clothes, phone, fancy, everything. So there's two different digital profiles right there just based on one show that they might watch on through their streaming.
Yeah, and if you're a dude that's watching Real Housewives of New Jersey, you're probably effeminate.
Yeah, and leaning towards the female, effeminate for sure, and big effeminate, and not just slightly, but probably over-the-top drama queen type effeminate. Okay, so your wired house, I bet your wired house is spying on you too.
You know, growing up watching the Jetsons cartoon, I thought it would be cool. You know, you walk in and you say lights, and lights come on, and then stove, start cooking dinner, all of a sudden something is thrown together, a casserole dish or something, it's put in the oven and it cooks, and I can just go sit down, TV channel 36, poof, there's the local news. Rosie, fetch my slippers and bring my pipe. And, you know, like George Jetson, I mean, he just came in, the chair took him into the living room, and I thought that would be cool.
Right.
But then you start looking at the reality, because I know there are a number of homes out there that have been designed this way.
Right.
That are controlled. You have everything on a tablet or your phone. And you just go, hey, turn on lights, and there's all your lights.
Right. But with every one of those things that goes through the Wi-Fi and your internet service provider, has the right to sell all that data, whatever it slurps up from all those devices, browsing history on your computers, on your phone, all of them. If you have security cameras installed in your home, videos are fair game for sharing with third parties. Your TV, I know my remote control has a microphone on it. I can tell it to look for a particular TV show because I have Dish TV. All that is fodder for the grist mill, so to speak. What happens when you go to bed, Jerry? Besides setting your smartphone next to your bed, so you set your smartphone next to your bed, and you set it for 6 o'clock to wake you up, or maybe you're even sleeping in. Okay, so your smartphone is sitting there next to your bed. It's going to hear how quickly you fell off to sleep. It's going to hear whether you have apnea. It's going to hear whether you and your spouse are having relations. It's going to hear whether you never have relations. Maybe it'll send you advertisements for Viagra or something like that.
Right. I mean, seriously. Or in the future, it could be a robot that would be your partner. I mean, that's where they're heading.
Another thing that's coming too. And of course, that'll all be usable information too. So let's say you go out on the town. Okay. So you go out on the town, there's cameras everywhere. Surveillance. So you walk past an ATM, there's a camera there. You go by intersections. There's cameras in so many of those. There's cameras in parking lots for grocery stores or the Walmart or like the entertainment district in downtown Austin. There's cameras there. There was a TV show called Person of Interest, and it was set in, I think it was New York City, a real congested city. So you would see in the intro, you would see this crowd of people walking the streets, and you would see that little square that appears on faces where it's recognizing your biometrics of your face and identifying you. So let's say you see this one man in a khaki jacket, and he's amongst the crowd, and it picks his face up, and he gets close to the phone booth, the phone rings. And it just happens to ring as he's getting there, and turns out the call is for him. Well, that's the TV show, but that's also the reality. England, many years ago, Tex wrote about England starting the CCTV surveillance, trying to make London and other parts a safer city. But of course, they have to sell you into getting rid of your privacy. So that's what they do. But it's also all over the world. It's in China. It's in the U.S. Jerry, here's a question. What city in the world has the most CCTV cameras? What city in the world, well known, has the most CCTV cameras?
I would say London.
You want to guess again?
New York?
It is. It's Washington, D.C.
Really?
I would have never thought that either, but apparently there are 44 government-accessible surveillance cameras per 1,000 people, the highest of any major global city.
Wow.
Why, until recently, has Washington, D.C. not been a safe place to be if they have all those CCTVs?
That's what I'm thinking.
And surveillance. Why is it not a safe place to be?
Right. They have carjackings, the murders, there's burglaries.
Apparently, the surveillance doesn't work because, number one, they don't prosecute anyway.
Well, true.
Wow. With the CCTV, you also have plate readers. I know our airport that we go through, Austin International, they have plate readers. They have probably for 20 years or so. So it didn't matter whether you were just dropping somebody off or going to park or pick somebody up, they were going to know who visited the airport by reading your plate. And, of course, that information was available to information brokers to sell for whatever purposes. Mm. Oh, back to the cars. Everything that's electronic, think about this for a moment. Everything that is electronic is hackable.
Yep.
Airplanes, cars. There was just recently Cloudflare, I think it was called, was hacked and it shut down. So it shut down a lot of businesses for, was it a whole day, Jerry?
It was 4 or 5 hours that I know of. One of the websites I go to, Citizen Free Press, is hosted on their platform.
Cloudflare.
Yeah. And So I know it was 4 or 5 hours that it was down, and because the publisher at Citizen Free Press said, we've been down. Don't know what happened with Cloudflare, but we're back and we'll be updating the news cycle soon. And it's like, whoa, okay. But anybody that is in the cloud or online, has a presence online, can be hacked. And there's... Absolutely.
Including cars.
Cars?
And it's happened. You've already seen, yeah, cars.
Yep.
Yours and my car. I don't know if my car is capable of it because it's 10 years old, but yours is newer because your old one got destroyed in the hailstorm.
Yep.
So yours is probably more apt to be hackable. And it is happening.
They can control the throttle. They can control the brakes. They can control the transmission.
They can control the zone where you're traveling. A friend of mine rented a box truck for moving he and his wife from Lubbock to San Antonio. He gets the box truck, and he's got it all loaded up, and he's heading down to San Antonio. And he gets outside of Lubbock, and the truck starts losing power, and he has to pull off to the side of the road. He calls the people that he rented the truck from and said, hey, what gives? My truck just broke down. And they said, oh, I'm sorry. We forgot to do the zone release on your truck. So here, do this. You know, I'm making this up. Honk the horn twice and turn the blinkers on 4 times and it's going to release it. And so he did all the stuff that they said. Like I said, I was making that up. But he said he had to go through a series of steps in order to get the truck to release from the zone. And then he was able to carry on his merry way. So that's what can happen, too. Your car may not be allowed to leave a particular zone. California, who wants to ban all of the gas vehicles, could they possibly create some kind of almost like a force field to repel all of us terrible gas vehicles?
Yeah, anything is possible today, Sandra. Well, we have flown through an hour.
Wow.
Fastest hour in radio.
I mean to tell you, if I can close with just one thing, you know, the point of this was for you to learn how bad this is, so that you can make mindful decisions about what you're doing and how much of it you want to do. A lot of the young people today are not going to care about it. You know, they're already plugged into the system and it's a way of life. But I would hope that they would learn how to be independent of it too. Anyway, it's just for you to be more mindful about some of the decisions that you make as you're engaging in your digital life.
Yes, ma'am. Sandra, thanks for coming on and being a guest of Power Prophecy.
Thank you, Jerry. Always good to be here.
Yes, ma'am. That's going to take care of our program this week. Sandra and I want to thank you for tuning in and giving us an hour of your time. We greatly appreciate it. And as always, I pray you will tune in again next week at this same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.